You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Massey University recently published an article titled "Microplastics Revealed in New Zealand Marine Mammals for the First Time," where scientists found microplastics in all of the New Zealand dolphins they examined. The international team led by Massey University and the Institute of Environmental Science and Research, also known as ESR, discovered that all common dolphins examined post-mortem during 2019 and 2020, and they had ingested microplastics. This morning I spoke with the study's first author, Professor Karen Stocken, the ESR lead, Dr. Olga Pantos, as well as co-author Dr. Gabriel Machowski, about their recent dolphin study. The three researchers talk about microplastics, what they are, how they affect wildlife and human health, as well as explain in more detail what specific things surprised them when conducting their research. I began by asking them to introduce their research and share why it is significant for us to learn more about marine mammals and microplastics in New Zealand in particular.
So The work that we've done here in the context of microplastics really fits into a broader umbrella of understanding pretty much different contaminants and different issues that can affect marine mammal health. This falls under a broader umbrella of One Health in many ways, because you're looking at how animal health, environmental health, and even human health are all interrelated. And of course, these kind of contaminants and plastics obviously have human as well as animal and wildlife implications as well. So this work really was about using as a first case scenario an examination of animals that had been submitted to Massey University for postmortem in 2019 and 20 for us to examine those animals in the context of microplastics. The reason why we felt that was important is that globally there's only been around 40 studies that have actually looked at microplastics in marine mammals. And of those, predominantly most of them have been done in the Northern Hemisphere, very much in Europe and in North America. And there's been very much an absence of work certainly done in Oceania, so Australia, New Zealand. And the only really Southern Hemisphere work that has been done in the microplastic space of those 40 studies has come from South America. So really there's a huge knowledge gap, not only in the fact that there's only around 40 or so international studies done on marine mammal microplastics, but also on top of that, there's a hole really in our understanding of what to the extent the problem is in the context of Australia and New Zealand.
Is there anything, Olga or Gabriel, you want to add to that, or?
Not from my side, Olga.
Yeah, I was thinking that maybe understanding what these exposure levels are, because we to understand risk, you need to know what the exposure levels are and the types, because the impact of microplastics is very much dependent on many different factors of the plastics. So seeing what's here, we can understand better what the risks are to the animals around here. Like Karen was saying, that the majority of the work has been done elsewhere, and it's not always that easy to or sensible to extrapolate from studies in other areas into your own area as well. So this really helps us better understand that risk to the New Zealand marine mammals.
Yeah, well, it's important. This piece of research is part of an overarching work that we have been doing at Massey University, exploring megaplastics as well in general, plastics in general, and how do they work as what we call evolutionary traps. Just for the audience to understand, there are two different ways for animals to ingest plastics. One is an indirect way that the animals, they could be consuming other animals that they already have microplastics inside, or filter feeding animals that they could be filtering water, and then plastics, they would be microplastics, they would be in the water column, or bigger plastics as well. And then the second aspect is that the animals, they directly consume plastics through misidentity or lots of availability in the environment. And what we are trying to understand basically is trying to develop like a sort of risk of plastic ingestion assessment. A while ago, with some other colleagues from Brazil, we published an article in Science, and we established that it would be really good, and this is the first step for us in New Zealand with marine mammals, it would be really good to understand more of plastic availability in the environment. It would be really good to try to understand some sort of if this is a direct or indirect intake or ingestion from these animals. It would be good to understand the nutritional state of the animals, whether they are hungry or not, if it's a direct ingestion, whether it's any sort of resemblance that they have with prey, and then what type of foraging strategies these animals have. And based on these four characteristics, we could have a potential assessment or what is the risk of these animals to continue ingesting plastics.
For those who may not know what microplastics are, could someone give a brief description maybe of what it is?
Yep, sure. So the definition of a microplastic is a plastic particle, 5 millimeters and smaller. And then when you get to 1 micron and below, they're termed nanoplastics. So I find the definition is a little bit misleading because people talk about the impacts of microplastics and the definition is 5 millimeters and smaller. It kind of suggests that if you're bigger than 5 millimeters, you're not going to have a detrimental effect. But size of the plastic is one of the key risk factors. So microplastics also divided into two categories. You have primary microplastics, and they're plastic particles of 5 millimeters and smaller that have been made of that size for their purpose. So these include the plastic pellets or nurdles that you hear talked about that wash up on beaches, and they're the pre-production plastics, which is how plastics are transported around the world in big sacks. So you get spillages of them. Wellington Harbour, been quite a lot of talk about the amount of nurdles washed up on the beaches there. But other things like glitter, that would be considered a primary microplastic. They vary in size, but quite often they're about 200 microns, so 0.2 of a millimetre. The plastics used in personal care products, which are banned now in New Zealand, but in other places around the world, they're still used, there'd be microplastics. So there's huge range of primary microplastics. Then secondary microplastics are the fragmented pieces of larger plastics as well. So your fibers from your clothes, your synthetic clothing breaks down, you'd have secondary microplastics. You know, a car drives over a plastic bottle on the street, it fractures into lots of bits of little plastics. So that'd be your secondary microplastics. And then they're broken down again further in by category, by their different shape, because shape can have an effect on how they impact an organism as well. So whether they're a fiber, a film, a fragment, or a bead. So we categorize them that way as well. And then of course, depends on the plastic, the polymer itself. We're most familiar with things like polypropylene, polyethylene, PET, nylon, but there's a massive range of synthetic polymers that are used for a whole range of things. But the ones in our food packaging are probably the ones we're most familiar with.
And as you touched on before, Karen, what are the impacts microplastics have on marine mammals or wildlife in general, as well as human health?
So one thing we know, of course, is that realistically the impacts of plastics on all health, and that even includes human health, still pretty much sits within its infancy. So there's still much to learn. We probably do know more about it, maybe so in humans than any other species, because understandably, there's a more urgent drive in many cases for us to fully understand that. But we certainly know that microplastics have been implicated or at least aligned with some of the different aspects of inflammation or congestion of different tissues. The potential even for plastics to flow transplacental in relation to fetuses, unborn fetuses. So we do know that there is obviously clear movement of microplastics from parent to offspring. And we also know that these tissues can collect in some of the organs that are of obviously prime importance to physiology and to healthy living, such as the lungs, as an example. What we're really not sure about, and as I say, is certainly in the case of marine mammals, we're certainly lagging behind a fuller understanding of the impact of microplastics. And that's predominantly because the impact of microplastics on marine mammals has been relatively understudied to date. Some of the probably the most important work that's been done in this emerging field, should we say, would probably be that of some of the work that's come from Dr. Sarah Nelms and her team at Exeter University, who have actually published some earlier work looking at the predominance of microplastics with regards to post-mortem findings of dolphins around the United Kingdom. And certainly in that study, there was certainly positive indication that there was correlations between infectious disease and microplastic loads in some of those animals. Now, as we know, of course, correlations correlation doesn't always necessarily lead to anything more than a correlation, but certainly what it does is it sends us somewhat of a sign here that there is definitely much more work to be done in this field. And we certainly do need to have a broader understanding of the role of plastics and microplastics in the health of oceans and marine mammals, not only because they're sentinel species and important to, as indicators to humans, but also because obviously at the end of the day, we're obviously very keen to understand what this means for our populations, our marine mammals. And of course, in New Zealand, very much of New Zealand society and New Zealand tourism is very much wrapped up around some of these enigmatic and, these megafauna that obviously are very important to New Zealand, not only for our tourism, but also because of our threatened and our endangered species, for example, such as Hectors and Maui dolphins. So a broader understanding of exactly what these implications are for microplastic load and infectious diseases is something which I think will be necessary and at the forefront of future work going forward. This is something that we really do need to think about as a collective group. This is where we call for transdisciplinary, research and collaboration in the paper we've just published, because realistically, this work relies upon everything from veterinary pathologists, ecotoxicologists, biologists, nutritionalists, as you've heard. We have a broad need for multidisciplinary research in this particular field.
I'm just going to expand maybe a bit on what Karen was saying about the effects. And so we really are just scratching the surface on this and understanding the risks. There's quite a lot of focus on the chemical and toxicological impacts of plastics on wildlife and on humans as well, but there are lots of other potential ways that they can affect health. So there's the chemical side, but they also can influence the microbes that are associated. So some that may be linked to the pathology, like Karen just said. But if they're altering the microbes that are associated with a system, they can also be affecting gut microbiomes. And we know that our microbiomes are really central to our health, and the same would apply for all creatures. And so there are lots of different facets. So that transdisciplinary approach is critical for us really working out what the risks are. But in the meantime, one of the key things we can do is help to reduce the level of plastics going out there, because all those big plastics that are out there now have the potential to turn into microplastics. So even if we turn the taps off now, there's still a lot out there that will break down and produce micro and then nanoplastics. The projections are that the amount of plastic being produced is just exponential. The increase is phenomenal. Yet we do already have all that plastic out there, which will, if in the right environments, break down into microplastics and nanoplastics. And it's that smaller range, the nanoplastics, we know even less about. They're very hard to study. We don't know the levels just because the techniques aren't quite there yet. So there's a lot of research going on in that area as well, so we can understand what those levels are and what the impacts are. Because once they start passing through membranes and between organs in our bodies, they behave very differently as well. So massive area of research, which we're all trying to work on, and hopefully we'll gradually understand more and more.
And something that Olga was saying as well, sometimes it's not about the plastic per se that caused the trouble here for the animals. It's all the associated chemicals around these microplastics. And we are in early stages of research, and we don't know much about all the chemicals and what is the extent of that physiological impacts in the animals. That means that this is a really important side of research that we can do in the future, baby steps, let's say.
In the Massey University article, it says that you were surprised to discover that most microplastics extracted from dolphins comprised fragments as opposed to fibers. Why was this surprising?
Yeah, this comes down to the fact that when you look at what's available in the international literature of those studies that I mentioned, predominantly the kind of microplastics that are identified in marine mammals have been that of the fiber form versus those of fragments. And so for us, this is one of the few studies that's actually shown the opposite reverse trend. And in actual fact, that fragments are far more prolific in the digestive tracts of marine mammals than fibre. So for that, for us, this was quite a surprising finding. Although saying that, we did note that in some of the freshwater sampling that had been done in New Zealand, this was also a similar trend. So maybe this just identifies, again, the more locational specifics that we've talked about before and the dangers of potentially extrapolating between areas or regions. The importance of doing these kind of studies to be fully clear about what is obviously in our New Zealand marine environment.
That was Professor Karen Stocken, Dr. Olga Pantos, and Dr. Gabriel Machowski speaking with me about their recent research discussing how microplastics have been found in New Zealand marine mammals for the first time.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.